When Bolshevik Barbie throws shade, you have the weapon of light. The truth. DNN. The Truth News Network.
Well, you never know when I'm calling you if we're going to be in a commercial break or if we're being live, so you need to be very diplomatic when you answer that phone.
Okay, I'm going to be careful.
Good morning.
Good morning. And I just sent you the link. It just went live.
The link to?
That story. The story. One we've been working on for weeks. The beginning of it. Part one, anyway.
Well.
So it's on its way to you right now.
Just so you know, I can't read links. And our audience can't hear links. So from our far west left coast, I have a demand from one of our loyal listeners that you got to break it down for us today.
Yeah. Do we want to start there? Or do we want to start somewhere else? Tell me where we're headed today, Dan.
Well, you sound like maybe you got up kind of late. Did you get up late, Steve?
I don't have a get up and a go to bed time. I don't set my alarm, and I don't have a specific time. So I think I turned off all of my devices last night at 3:30 a.m. So yeah,
short night.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I want you to get up to full speed, and I think the best way for you to get up to full speed. I may keep you a little longer today than we normally do because I've got at least two things I want to involve you in conversation. Let's go ahead and you break down the story that you have been telling us about, you've been working on now for several weeks.
Yeah, Dan, this has been a long process. I have been collaborating with investigative journalists at the Epoch Times. His name is Joseph Hanneman, or Joe Hanneman. And Joe and I came into a relationship some time ago because we kept cross-pollinating in our investigations and stories related to January 6th. Since he came on board with them about a year and a half ago, I think it was, that's been pretty much his primary focus. That's his beat, as they say, is January 6th. And it's amazing that you can have at any news department, especially one as large as the Epoch Times, which is a worldwide organization, that you can have somebody dedicated to a story that's 2 years old. But this story is not done, and he's not the only one at the only media source who is solely dedicated to the events of January 6th. And in fact, even though that is basically his focus and primary job with Epoch Times is all things related to January 6th, there are other writers at the Epoch Times who also write stories about January 6th. So it's a big thing. And I don't even know, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on or what your feelings are about January 6th, if Americans really understand how big that story still is as it's continuing to unfold, particularly on the legal side, but not just on the legal side with all of the trials that are taking place right now, but in terms of the actual need to know what happened that day. It's like, it's not an overstatement for me to say that this is on the level with the assassination of JFK, John F. Kennedy. And as you see now, here we are 60 years later, we're finally learning more about that assassination than we, you know, have ever known 60 years later. And here we are only 2 years later after January 6th, and it's just really beginning the investigations into this. And is there government cover up? Is there government participation in what was taking place that day? Just the same question we asked about JFK, isn't it? Was the CIA involved with that? Was the government involved in any way? Was Vice President Johnson involved in any way at that time? All of these questions are finally beginning to be answered. And I hope this doesn't take 60 years because you and I won't be around to see the answers unfold. But I hope that we're able to pull the veil off of this thing very quickly. So there you go. There's my groundwork laid. And to say that is that when I entered this process with Joe Hanneman on this story, it was understood that because I'm not an employee of the Epoch Times that I may or may not get a byline on this story. And their editors have a hard, fast rule that non-employees don't get bylines, even despite the fact that I've spent dozens and dozens of hours and weeks of research and travel and personal expense involved in this. But I'll be able to springboard off of this with my own stories, my own versions, and then, of course, as they say, my spinoffs related to this story. But here it is, and this is what we have been working on. We have been talking to and working with, we can't call him really a whistleblower, and I'll tell you why we can't call him a whistleblower, is he was, after January 6th, this particular lieutenant on the United States Capitol Police, his name is Tarik Johnson, Lieutenant Tarik Johnson, formerly of the United States Capitol Police, because after the day on January 6th, he was immediately reprimanded, he was immediately suspended for some of his actions that day. And then he was put into suspension for 17 months. And during that 17 months, Dan, he had a gag order on him so intense that, first of all, and it's hard to believe that they can do this, but they can. He was during the hours that a normal person would go to work. So from 8 to 5 every day, he had to stay home. He couldn't go anywhere. He couldn't go to the store. He could leave after 5 p.m., but what an odd punishment and an odd suspension when you send somebody home. This wasn't a legal issue. He hadn't been arrested for anything. He hadn't stood before a judge for anything. But by rules of his business, in order for him to keep drawing his paycheck during his suspension, they told him he had to stay home from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. Then during that same period of time, he could not speak to anyone else with the Capitol Police. He was not allowed to have a conversation, phone call of any kind whatsoever with any member of the Capitol Police, including his best friend. He had to go 17 months without being allowed, or not allowed to speak to his best friend, who was then also a Capitol Police officer, who has also since retired, who I have also met with. And so that is beginning to kind of reveal now to your audience, but everybody may remember this story. I would ask everybody to, if you remember the story of the Capitol Police officer who put on the red MAGA hat that day and famously was videoed approaching two Oath Keepers and requesting their assistance to rescue 16 Capitol Police officers that had been trapped inside a rotunda area corridor. Do you recall that story, Dan?
Yes, I do.
And this particular officer, because he put that cap on, is the officer that I'm talking about who was suspended for 17 months. And that seems to be an overreaction by the Capitol Police and their oversight board, or their whatever their internal investigative functions are, because what he did that day was A, on video, rescue 16 of their own law enforcement officers from a very tense and potentially violent, a situation that could have erupted into something far worse than what happened. And this was an initiative that was taken by this particular red MAGA hat wearing officer of the Capitol Police. That is the same officer that I'm talking about. That is Lieutenant Tarik Johnson. And Tarik Johnson was suspended for that action. It was conduct unbecoming. He was busted down from lieutenant to private. As I said, suspended for 17 months, put on basically home lockdown during that time period. And after going through all of the legal proceedings with his own legal team and that sort of thing, he finally got his rank back and they finally gave him his job back. But they gave him, allowed him to come back to work, but they gave him an interior small closet office and said, this is where you'll work for the rest of your career. So they were basically put him in a desk job in an office with no windows in the middle of the Capitol. And as a result of that, he immediately took his retirement. Because I think at the time, by January 6th, I think he had been with them for 23 years. So he qualified for retirement at that time. So he said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he quit. And then the story begins, because we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that this was a far and away an overreaction. And there must be some other reason why this particular lieutenant was so harshly treated, punished, drugged through the mill, had stories written in mainstream media about him, talking about his suspension, but not about the other work that he had done. And this is what is absolutely incredible, is when the truth finally begins to roll out, and this story here in the Epoch Times will lay that out for everyone, and I would highly encourage everybody to go read it. The title of the story is Former U.S. Capitol Police Commander Reveals Failures in January 6th Evacuation Response. We're not talking about the evacuation of those 16 law enforcement officers on the Capitol Police that he famously, single-handedly, well, he got help from a couple of oath keepers, which was embarrassing enough considering all the other problems that the oath keepers have had and that the government had portraying them as this right-wing terrorist extremist group. But the reality is, and the truth behind why they wanted to silence Tarik Johnson, is because he single-handedly initiated the evacuations of both the Senate and the House of Representatives that day, because they could get no answer from leadership in the command center. And this is the story that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
About Assistant Chief Yoganda Pittman,
yeah,
who failed to respond to repeated urgent calls from law enforcement, Capitol Police officers that day when the breaches were happening. And this is something people must understand, Dan. It doesn't matter who started this. It doesn't matter if it was Antifa. It doesn't matter if it was right-wing militia groups that all got together and conspired to attack the Capitol that day. It doesn't matter if this was an FBI plot. It doesn't matter if this plot came from the desk of Nancy Pelosi herself. What people must understand, and I saw it in their eyes that day up close, captured it. I'm talking about as close sometimes as a foot or 2 foot away from my own face, my own camera, is the fear and the terror in those law enforcement officers' eyes that day as they saw coming over my shoulder. Now, I'm standing up there with a camera, but behind me were thousands upon thousands of people descending upon the Capitol, and they had no idea what the intentions of these people were. All they knew was that the frontline provocateurs were violent, and that they had evil intentions in their hearts and minds, and they were attacking law enforcement officers. They were injuring law enforcement officers. They were trying to breach barricades. They did. They were trying to breach police lines. They did. They were trying to get into the Capitol. They did, those initial. But they didn't know that there's tens of thousands of people that were descending on them from over, you know, my shoulders behind me, that they didn't also have the same intent. Those officers did not know if they were going home to their families that day. And that's because when they showed up at work that morning, nobody told them that there was even going to be so much as a protest, a march, or even the licensed events that were on the Capitol grounds, licensed by the Capitol Police Department itself, for stages and protest rallies and speakers, VIP speakers, including congressmen. They did not even inform the officers on duty that day that there was going to be something taking place at the Capitol that day. All they knew is that at 12:50-ish, 52, there was an initial breach on an outer barricade. And then on the radio traffic, we've been breached. We have a breach. And all of a sudden, almost simultaneously, they discovered, coincidentally, two pipe bombs, one at the RNC, one at the DNC. Because the RNC building and the DNC building are actually under the purview of the Capitol Police Department, one of the 16 buildings that they are in charge of in the Capitol itself of D.C., that then diminished what they had at the Capitol. It thinned them out. It was a diversion. Those pipe bombs were obviously a diversion because many of those officers had to leave the Capitol, go. One group of them had to go to the RNC, another group had to go to the DNC, and then it diminished their numbers there at the Capitol, already understaffed as they were, and now they're severely understaffed as, at the same time, coincidentally, there are individuals showing up with the intent of getting inside the Capitol. So my point is we had no, they had no idea what was coming at them that day, but when it started happening, they started making calls. They didn't know what to do, and they were getting nothing from leadership. They were getting nothing from the command center. And we know now that both chief of police, the chief of the Capitol Police, Stephen Sund, and the assistant, the number two, Chief Yogananda Pittman, they were both in the command center that day. The story goes, in fact, Stephen Sund just has a brand new book that just came out, I think just in the last week. And according to his testimony and according to his story, he was in the command center as well, but he was occupied with the two sergeants of arms. He was occupied calling, you know, the National Guard. He was occupied calling the Pentagon. He was handling all the upper level stuff, leaving Assistant Chief Pittman to monitor, you know, and this is a true command center. They have access to all of the video screens, all of the Capitol closed circuit televisions, interior and exterior. They could see everything that was coming, everything that was approaching. They could see on those closed caption television monitors the crowds, where they were coming from, which direction of the Capitol, how many there were, and what their needs were in terms of unit placement around the Capitol to handle those individual barricades. But there's one voice missing from all those radio traffic.
And what I'm going to do, I'm going to stop you right there, because I want to know who that voice is. I want to know who the they are. I think everybody has drawn the conclusion now that there's a lot of evil stuff that's bubbling underneath the surface. I mean, all these people, these evil protesters, you know, the ones that they did go places they weren't supposed to go. And some of them did some bad stuff. But these people that have been in jail for 18 months, 2 years, nobody understands that they're has to be a conservative, a concerted undergirding of purpose in all of this. And that means there's got to be a they. I want to launch into that, but we're going to take this break. Steve Baker with us, as he is every Tuesday. And by the way, that story in the Epic Times, we will go live with it at truthnewsnet.org. truthnewsnet.org. It'll be on the front page within 30 minutes of this show going off the air. So if you want to read it, you can go there. Steve Baker will be right back with us. This is getting really, really deep.
Starbucks Via Instant is made with the same 100% Arabica beans served at Starbucks. So it's the only instant with the rich, delicious taste of the Starbucks coffees you love, and takes only seconds to make. Starbucks Via Instant, the only instant coffee of its kind. Available in black, flavored lattes, and iced coffee.
In the steel industry, we dedicate our careers to supporting this country. Making products to build infrastructure and skylines, creating jobs, supporting families. And when domestic materials are used, the money stays in our communities. That's what really matters. These people, these places, that's worth supporting.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Motel 6's new improved website lets you book a room and save more for what you travel for faster than ever. Even faster than you can find your keys, which you swore were right on the little hooky thing by the garage door where they always are, and we can land a robot on a comet, but we can't keep keys from disappearing. Oh, here they are. Left them in my jacket. Don't you hate that? I'm Tom Baudet for the new improved Motel6.com, and we'll leave the light on for you.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, my company has like 7 different printers. How's your ink selection?
Behold, Staples Wall of Ink.
Just wow.
A huge selection of ink and toner guaranteed in stock.
Hello, awesome.
If it's not, we take $10 off and ship it to you free.
Pinch me. I said pinch.
I heard you.
New low prices on ink and toner and an in-stock guarantee. Staples, make more happen.
Ah, history. Always will repeat itself. U.S. government always repeats itself with travesties of all kinds. It seems like every administration throughout our history has had something that came up that just was a little bit unsettling. And so Steve Baker has been talking to us about this one officer that he just got stuck away for a year and a half. Couldn't say anything, couldn't go to work, was drawing a paycheck, couldn't even talk to his friends. Steve, you got our curiosity up. Who is the they in this entire thing and exactly what's going on?
Well, let's talk about Lieutenant Tarik Johnson, first of all.
Okay.
As we've already mentioned, he famously was the guy who engaged with those two oath keepers to rescue 16 of his fellow officers out of a very tense situation in the rotunda. And that is ostensibly the reason for which he was disciplined for conduct unbecoming, because he put on a red MAGA hat. Now, he called that red MAGA hat his helmet because he was able to pass through the crowd successfully. He was able to not be pushed, shoved, attacked, pepper sprayed, verbally abused by the crowd, because it was a great tactical move on his part, and he should have been lauded for that. Instead, he was punished for that. But that's not what he was punished for. What he was punished for was his heroism for the hours leading up to that event. Beginning as early as about, well, right at the first breach, which happened at 12:52 p.m. of the outer barricade on the west side, you start hearing Tarik Johnson's voice on what has been previously a sealed radio transmission, which has never been released to the public. This is, we always hear about those 14,000 hours of videotape. There's a lot of video. There's a lot of audio. There's a lot else that has a lot of other documents that have not been released. And the Epoch Times managed to secure some of that audio. And what we hear in that is we hear over and over and over again one lieutenant crying out for help, crying out for assistance. And when he doesn't get it, he takes command authority himself, and basically several times during this radio transmission says, "Never mind, I'll get it done." And then he gets it done. So he is not only concerned about the safety of his officers all day. So when the officers are beginning to be attacked, he literally starts organizing on his own the triage centers, the decontamination tents. He's organizing shipments of water from their, you know, their supply centers to bring out there so that they can decontaminate these guys and flush their eyes out. And then on top of that, there's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of more people are swarming the Capitol and pressing against these just a limited number of law enforcement officers. And he is well aware, because he's on the ground, he's boots on the ground. He knows they're going to be breached. He knows, because they're not going. In fact, he even says, "We're not going to use lethal force on this crowd." He says this on the radio, and then he does something really dramatic. He calls for all the M4 units to move inside the Capitol to protect the Capitol itself. Now, when he says an M4 unit, these are the guys on the force carrying automatic weapons, the automatic rifles, M4 rifle. He calls for all. This is not coming from the command center. This is not coming from the people up in the command center with the ability to see everything, the entire perimeter of the Capitol, including, as I said before, inside and outside. This is one guy on the ground taking on the responsibility of what should be taken coming from the command center and from the assistant chief. Instead, because she's either a deer in the headlights or because she's been told to allow this to proceed as planned, whatever the case may be, this lieutenant, this young, not young, he's 40, he was 46 at the time, he's 48 now, 46-year-old black lieutenant, Capitol Police officer, basically takes the weight of the entire Capitol on his own shoulders. And we hear his voice over and over and over again, up until the point where he finally, the Capitol is finally breached, and he is calling in, begging the command center, give us a plan. Give up. He's ordering surge units here and protective units here and hard units here. He's basically become the field general because he can't get help from the command center. And so finally, the Capitol is breached, and on his own, he comes up with the plan to evacuate the Senate. Now, remember, when I say this, we know now that in hindsight, that most of the people that entered the Capitol that day were what I call accidental tourists. They weren't armed in so much as anything more than an American flag or a Trump flag or something like that. They weren't armed. They had their cell phones. They were taking selfies. That's what most of them ended up being. But at the time, the Capitol Police had no idea because they had not been informed from their command what was happening that day. And then they were given no assistance. And this is no conspiracy. This is what we have seen with our own eyes. This is what we've heard with our own ears. And this is what we have learned in direct sit-down, personal, face-to-face testimonies from these officers, is that they were left alone on their own that day with no assistance from command at all. And that is the next question, Dan. We have to find out the answer why that took place. Why were they not informed about what was going on in the city that day? Why were they not informed about the actual permitted protests that were going to take place on the Capitol grounds that day? Why were they not told by command, you have X number of people coming up on this side? Why were they not assisted by command in any way on the ground? But this one officer took the weight of all that on himself, and it's like a movie. In fact, there should be a movie made about this guy, because just a normal, average, everyday career officer who's spent probably 20 of his 23 years as a Capitol Police officer, answering questions about from tourists where to go. This is because that's most of the Capitol Police, most of the time, they're glorified tour directors.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, the building that he has been commissioned and taken an oath to protect, including the members of our own government, Congress, Vice President was in the building that day. It is suddenly all falling apart with no warning whatsoever. And this guy just rose to the occasion. He single-handedly figures out how to evacuate the Senate, what hallway to take them down, which stairwell to take them down. He's running around. He's running around like a bat out of hell, finding out where the incursions have not yet been made and what hallways are clear, what stairways are clear, whether or not the tunnels are clear or not. And then as soon as he gets the Senate evacuated, he breaks out. And somehow, some way, this guy magically is able to navigate this crowd when other officers that day weren't able to. Other lauded officers like Harry Dunn, who's been made one of the heroes of that day, and he's anything but. You and I have talked about him before, and he's made the hero, whereas this guy was made the villain and was disciplined and put away for 17 months. And then I think they thought when they gave him his job back that he would keep his mouth shut and not begin talking. But what happened was, he's one of those good guys. And that's just, there's just no other way to say it. And he's a lifelong Democrat on top of that. But this is what he has told Joe and myself to our face. He said, the bottom line for me is that the American people must know the truth about what happened that day. And if we don't, if he doesn't do that, if the truth is not known, then this kind of thing is going to happen again. And he wants justice. And this is, I'm quoting the last line of the article. He says, "I hope for justice for all the people that died that day and after as a result of January 6th. I hope for justice for all the people that got hurt that day. I hope for justice for all the American people, as they deserve to know what really happened and what really happened and what we discovered." And this is very well laid out in this story. And you'll, as I said, there's embedded audio, there's edited audio from the acquired U.S. Capitol Police radio transmissions. There's actually one of my videos in there that backs up what I was telling you about the fear in these officers' eyes. And then there's also, you're going to have it on your website. So I just encourage everybody to click on that on your website and start going through this. And I'm sure they're going to have questions, and we can answer those questions in subsequent days and interviews. But this is huge because, and this is only part one, but this begins to open up that gateway, that pathway, as it were, that you asked about before. Where did this really all come from? Who is at the top of that chain? Who was up the chain that day calling the signals? Or in this case, not calling the signals.
Well, you and I both know the process of investigative journalism. It's a process, and you don't get everything at one time. You get things, and then based on the things you get, you ask more questions, you find out there are more people involved in it, and you follow every opening if you want to get all the way through it. I got to be honest with you. In our society today, and when I say our society, I'm talking about you and me in media, investigative media, there aren't that many inquisitive minds that are committed to, when anything good happens, as well as anything bad happens, to spend the effort and the energy to go all the way through it. They'll go until they find the part that they agree with, or it makes their particular perspective sound reasonable, and they'll stop there. I got to be honest with you. I've got 50 questions that I would ask you right now about what you have said about him, and the obvious ones are out there. Let me just fast forward to this. How much beyond what you just told us do you already know? And I don't want you to tell us what it is, because I know the process is ongoing. How much do you already know?
I know a lot more that I'm actually legally not even able to talk about yet, Dan. And I think we've talked, I think we've shared it, because of my work with some of the attorneys during the Oath Keepers trial. I was read into and actually signed paperwork that allowed me to see things that I can't disclose. And that's really tough, juggling that in my head, especially as much as I write and as much as I talk and as many interviews as I do about this thing, because I have to compartmentalize and remember what I can say and what I can't say. I remember what I've seen and think to myself, oh yeah, I've seen that, but I can't talk about that. I know a lot more than I can say. For instance, I know beyond any shadow of a doubt, and I can tell the American people that the proof exists that Officer Harry Dunn is a liar. That he lied on the stand in the Oath Keepers trial. He lied on the stand at the House Select Committee in his testimonies toward them. He lied in his FBI interviews. I've seen them. They were under seal until recently. I saw them before they were released to the public. I have seen the video in which he claims that Oath Keepers were confrontational with him, and that there was another group that looked like the Oath Keepers that actually did the work for him and keeping him safe from some more violent of the protesters inside the Capitol building. And I can tell you that I have seen all of the evidence with my own eyes, not yet released to the public, and he is a liar. I can tell you he's a liar. I just can't tell you what I've seen.
Well, listen, you and I are close. We can share pretty much anything with anybody. Why don't we handle this thing just like the mainstream media handles it? Somebody will do a story and put it out there, and they'll say, anonymous sources say, and then the next guy that picks it up, he'll say, multiple sources have confirmed. So why don't you do this? We're going to go to our final break. When we come back, I've got something I want to get you to visit with us for a moment that has nothing to do with this, actually has nothing to do with government other than the FDA and the CDC. But why don't you, while we're at break here, why don't you whisper to me the other stuff that you know, and therefore I'll release it and it'll keep you from getting in trouble. I'm joking.
Because our Langley guys are probably listening right now.
Yeah, they are. They always are. Steve Baker with us. We're going to wrap up the hour, most of the hour, with him in just a second. But we have this important thing to bring to you.
Look, we know that boy's going to ask again, so let's be ready.
Fine. I'll be him. You ready?
Ready.
Mom, could you hook me up with a GoPhone?
You'll run up the bill, son.
Yo, that's whack, Moms. GoPhone is totally different.
What? It'll only cost me an arm?
Chillax. It has unlimited talk and text.
Seriously?
Word.
Okay, we'll get a GoPhone.
Really? Really? That is the bomb.
Do you even know what the bomb means?
Yes. No. Hey!
GoPhone, only from AT&T. With unlimited talk to 65 million wireless AT&T customers and now unlimited text to anyone on any network. AT&T, your world delivered.
Enrique Santos for Taco Bell. The toasted cheddar chalupa from Taco Bell is back, and I know what you're thinking, because I'm thinking the same thing. Did they really toast six-month-old aged cheddar right onto a delicious flaky chalupa shell again? Yes, they did, but now it's even tastier. It comes with a crunchy taco, cinnamon twist, and a medium drink, all in a $5 box. That's right, all that for just a little cheddar. But don't forget, it's back for a limited time. The $5 Toasted Cheddar Chalupa Box, only at Taco Bell.
So it's this beautiful summer day, and while most guys would say, let's go to the beach, Donnie says,
hey, let's go to Pilgrim Furniture in Mattress City. They're having a warehouse sale.
I say, are you serious? He says,
your place needs furniture. And at the sale, you can get beautiful stuff and save 50, 60, even 80%.
So we go to the Pilgrim Warehouse sale. I buy a sofa, a love seat, and this really cute dinette set. But the big thing is, we pick it out together, Donnie and me. Maybe this relationship is going somewhere.
The warehouse sale at Pilgrim Furniture in Mattress City.
10 to 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 10.
Planet Fitness, through the use of motivating montage music, has made it easy to join. Just remember 10 10 10. For 10 days, sign up for $10 and pay just 10 bucks a month after that. Hurry, you only have until November 10th to take advantage of this Planet Fitness offer. Planet Fitness on 42nd Street next to Shopko. 10 to 10 to 10 to 10.
Need more cowbell? Better yet, how about the Ring of Truth? TNN, the Truth News Network, and Dan Newman.
Steve Baker with us here. Before we get away from the story we've been talking about that just broke just minutes ago on Epic Times, Steve, I want to ask you this. How much more is there yet to be disclosed about this story? Just give me a ballpark.
As I said at the very beginning of our interview today, that this is, we're just cracking this thing open. And as I said, it took 60 years for us to get to where we are with JFK. And as we talked about, I think last week, as we now know, once the January 6th committee was dissolved because of the old Congress being dissolved with the changeover in the House of Representatives, suddenly all of those interviews, 1,200 interview transcripts, videos, and such, all went into the National Archives and will be there for as little as 20 years, maybe as long as 50 years before they can be released to the public. Isn't that amazing?
Why do they do that? Just automatically to keep it from the American people?
Apparently so. I mean, what other answer is there, Dan? Because you have a situation where the January 6th House Select Committee, that was, you know, anything but a real committee.
Yeah.
They executed over 1,200 interviews. Only released to the public the transcripts of 140 of those. They did 8 or 9 or 10, you know, Hollywood-produced primetime specials where they had their pre-rehearsed witnesses, 2 or 3 in each session that testified, one of those being Harry Dunn that I mentioned a little while ago. And then Pelosi loses control of the House. They dissolve the committee. Automatically, all those transcripts, of the 1,200, only 140 have been released. And then all of a sudden, overnight, literally, boom, they all go into the archives, and then it becomes an insanely complex process to get them released by virtue of the rules that have been set up in our government. And we all know why those rules are set up to be so difficult is because they are doing things every single day behind closed doors in that building that they don't want us to know about.
Absolutely. Well,
and that's why. There's no other reason. That is the answer.
We're going to continue to encourage you to come to us, share it with us, whatever you get. And there's a book in there. You and I have talked about it. There's a book in there. There's a way to make a lot of money, Steve. Hey, I want to segue to the other event that I wanted to, while I have you with us, to talk about. Somebody probably that is listening has heard and is excited about this new miracle Alzheimer's drug that Joe Biden's administration just released, the fact that the FDA has approved it. Now, I mean, that's a big deal. Alzheimer's is probably the scourge of this generation. In the last 10 days, I lost my mother-in-law to Alzheimer's. My mother died of Alzheimer's.
My dad died of Alzheimer's.
So every one of us listening, everybody that's in this with us today, there are people very close to us that have lost their lives. Not officially Alzheimer's as the cause of death, but Alzheimer leads to the conditions that exacerbate because of Alzheimer's that ends in death. Right. So the fact that we've got this miracle drug, forget about the fact that it was just released right about the time Joe Biden's going to announce his run for reelection. And he, of course, he needs a dose or two of it right now, you know. Forget about that. But
he may already be on it, right?
He might be. The guy that I am, I said, you know, this is just too good to be true. So I started looking into it. It's called Leqembi. Leqembi. And it's going to be initiated in patients with mild cognitive impairment or mild dementia. And to be eligible for it, patients got to have confirmed beta amyloid accumulation in the brain. That's that stuff that they've been trying to figure out what it was that's common in every Alzheimer's patient, that it kind of blocks a lot of the transmissions in the brain. The FDA's approval under the, now you're not going to hear this probably anywhere else, they got it approved under the accelerated approval pathway that the FDA has. Of course, they use it only when it's politically expedient. But they're saying it's an important milestone in 4 days of research in Alzheimer's disease and reflects our continued commitment to alleviating the burden of Alzheimer's disease for patients and their families. That's from the CEO of the company that invented it and is taking it to market. Now, me being what I am, I said, okay, I'm sure this was extensively tested in laboratory trials. And it was. It was 150 people. 150 people. Fast-tracked, not years of clinical trials and, you know, bringing in a bunch of medical experts from around the world to do it. No. 150 people. And guess what the results were in the clinical trials? It was...
Just tell me how many died.
Let me just read the line from the press release from the trials. Data showed that Leqembi led to a significant, whopping, now that's my word, 27% slowing of cognitive decline compared with the placebo. So what that means is they had 150 people that were involved. Half of them took the placebo. So only 75 people, only 75 people, and what this came out from their very short study, this drug is going to market. In fact, if you want it, you can probably, we were told yesterday, you can probably get it from your doctor starting next week. Now, of those 27%, okay, what about the other ones? What about the 83%? Excuse me, the 73%. What about them? There are only 7 people that had massive brain bleed. Only 7.
Mm. Only.
And so once again, we circle back to our federal government. The CDC is involved in this naturally. National Institutes of Health, the NAIAD, which is Fauci's kingdom, of which he has, we're told, retired and left. But we hadn't, you and I hadn't talked about this. And so now I threw it out there to you, and I want your thoughts, your immediate thoughts on it. I've dug into it, and I can pass along the clinical trial information. Glad to do it. But what are your thoughts?
My initial thoughts are that there will be many, many, many people that will beg for this drug out of the natural human selfishness of wanting to cling to a family member longer, cling to their, you know, awareness longer, because you've been through it. I've been through it. I remember myself that when my father was first diagnosed, he still obviously knew who I was. He knew what his circumstances were. He wrote in his own journal. He says on the day that he was diagnosed, he said, he wrote in his journal, my doctor told me today that I'm going to go crazy. And so he's very aware in the early stages of that.
Yeah.
And then he continued to journal for another couple of years, maybe until his mind just, he basically probably forgot that he journaled and just stopped one day. And then there was a time at one of the family gatherings where he didn't know me any longer. Typically an Alzheimer's patient will remember the person or the family member that they're most exposed to most often every day. And of course, in this case, it would have been my mom, and that's who it was. So because I lived the furthest away, I was the first one that he forgot and didn't know me anymore. And then subsequently, he forgot my sisters, and then he forgot other family members. And then finally, one day, he didn't know who this lady is. My mom became that lady. That lady. And so eventually then she faded from the memory.
Yeah.
But I know what's going to happen is that despite the fact that this has not been properly tested, despite the fact that that is a ridiculously high number for such a small cohort in the study of adverse effects to be taking place with the brain swelling, brain bleeding, that such as that, is that this will be rushed to market. For a couple of reasons. Number one, as you said, there are political reasons for the Biden administration's FDA and CDC to approve this and to do big press conferences and to come out and talk about, you know, because you remember he did tell us that he was going to cure cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're still waiting for that. But this is an interim medical miracle is the way that they'll portray it. But they're going to take advantage of the basic humanity and the selfishness that we have of wanting to cling to someone longer. And when you're only getting, what did you say, was it 27% reduction in cognitive decline?
Mild reduction in cognitive decline. Mild. Among 27%.
Oh, a mild reduction in cognitive decline among 27% of those who received it.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Well, what about the 73%? Percent, you know.
Yeah, what about the 73%? Right, exactly. Yeah. And this is what's going to happen is that A, it's not what it's cracked up to be. B, somebody's going to make billions of dollars off of this. C, there's going to be a political political gain from the administration by pushing this out into the market prematurely.
Yeah.
And then, as I said before, and this is what's so difficult about Alzheimer's is that just think about when the Social Security Administration was passed into law back in the late 30s, the average the average mortality of age was 48 years, Dan, 48. So that's why they set the retirement age at 65, because as an average, most people would never hit 65. But now we're living to be 78 years.
Yeah.
It literally increased 30 years. And that's why the Social Security Administration is upside down. That's why it's become a Ponzi scheme itself, because the numbers don't work anymore because we're living longer. And then the same thing happens in this situation right here, is that because we're living longer, we are, in fact, subjecting ourselves by just virtue of longevity. We're subjecting ourselves and our brains to the possibility, because they're able to fix us. Think about it, Dan. We always want to villainize, you know, big pharma and big this and big bank, big insurance, whatever. But, you know, they have medicine and pharmaceuticals have come up with ways to make us live for decades longer than we would have otherwise. So consequently, sometimes our bodies are outliving our brains. And I know people don't want, to think about it that way.
Yeah.
But it's the reality. And if our own selfish desire to hold on to mom, to dad, to grandpa, to Aunt Lucy or whatever for that much longer, but what are we putting them through in that process as well? Because what's one thing we can't see inside that mind when they have lost their cognitive ability to know who the people are around them, what torture is going on inside of them in the terror of the unknown? What are we putting them through by giving them, some of them, 27% of them, a mild increase in their cognitive ability?
And then at the end of it all, those other people, not the 27%, but the other people, when we find out that there are really egregious adverse events, reactions to the vaccinations that will occur, they always do. We know that. And then the end for many of these people is horrendous. It's horrible. What recourse do the family members have against this drug and against this drug company that rushed this to the market? Once again, our government insulates this company, this new company, from any liability, because the government chose, the FDA chose, to put it in emergency use authorization status only, which means they're indemnifying the drug company from any liabilities. So if you want to do something, if you find out the egregious nature of this and it negatively impacted your loved one, the only people you can sue is the federal government. And we all know
one of the most frustrating things that we've had since the beginning of the FDA is this 10, 15, 20 year process for approval of a new potentially life-saving drug. But we know why that process exists, and we know why it costs the average drug maker $1 billion to get any particular pill to market. Is it because of the safety concerns and making sure, A, that it's doing what it's supposed to do, and B, its adverse effects aren't worse than the disease itself that it's supposed to be curing? We know that. And I've always been okay with, and I've been a fan of, somebody who is given a terminal pronouncement or diagnosis of whatever the disease is, of being able to then leap, you know, over that boundary that the FDA has set up, and to voluntarily on their own sign away the risk and take an experimental drug before its final approval.
If you remember, Donald Trump actually threw executive order, and I don't remember what drugs it was, but it was for several drugs, to make it legal for American citizens to jump over that on those particular listed drugs and try them, because they had no other alternative. They were going to die. This was a way that they chose to try to extend their lives.
Yeah. But this one's different. This one's different. Alzheimer's hits close to home, and this is a different kind of thing. And I agree with your initial statement that anyone who would automatically run to their doctor And then run to the government to pay for it. Because I guess I think this is going to be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per dose in order to take this.
Well, the estimate on cost for it's an every other week injection. And the estimated cost is going to be $26,500 a year. And they say Medicare is going to cover it. So what does that mean? That means the taxpayers are going to be paying for it. But it's going in people's pockets. I mean, as you said it, we look at the horrible drug costs from these big pharma companies and we forget the years and years of research that they put into it and the huge costs they have from their research, clinical trials, getting approval, the rounds of approval process that you have to go through with the FDA. I understand that. I'm okay with that far more then I am okay with rushing these drugs to the market, especially when we have hard, cold data. Even right now that says this thing, I mean, come on now, 27% is the number that the drug company is saying. 27% of those in the clinical trial showed, I forget the exact terminology, slight cognitive ability improvement, slight, only 27%. What's the cost? What's a realistic cost? Steve, thank you so much for being here. Love having you. This show will be posted at Truth News Network, the show in its entirety, and we'll also, just after the end of the show, we will publish that Epic Times story that Steve has been talking about that broke this morning. Mr. Baker, you are welcome anytime here.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great one, and we will talk soon.
You're fighting back the tidal wave of deceit, lies, spin, and ignorance with TNN, the Truth News Network.